Hi, today is May 29th, 2022. This is MobiView's podcast 408. I'm Todd Ogasso-Ord, my good friend John Wesley. And I'm just wondering if I'm recording from the correct microphone. But you know what? Let me check. Nothing like checking live. Yep.
You know, we really prep long in advance for this. I think our show notes get prepped maybe up to a day in advance.
Yep.
We are well prepared.
Yep. And I just want to note two things I wanted to note. One, last week I recorded using my MacBook's microphone because I completely forgot to attach my USB microphone. So this week the USB mic is back. I hope it sounds a little bit better. John always says it runs a little hot for the first few seconds. I'm not sure what happened there, but we'll find out when I listen to the recording.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at. Hey, John, can you say something? 1, 2, 3.
I can say a few things to our illustrious audience that have no merit, which is so different from everything else.
Okay, I see you on the view meter. And a second thing I want to note is, speaking of how we prepare for podcasts, is I've been doing this all wrong, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, not making money and all of that. Because I don't know if you saw my post, John, but Conan O'Brien, whose TV show I enjoyed for many years and has started a podcast empire I think 3 or 4 years ago, he just sold his podcast network for $150 million to Sirius Radio.
Yeah, I saw that. And we have been doing it all wrong. But, you know, there's always a chance we could turn this around. We might be the next hot thing.
John. Oh, boy.
I know.
$150 million.
You can always hope.
Yeah.
I would sell our podcast for a lot less than $150 million. I'm thinking $1 million would probably be good enough, you know?
Hey, there you go. You know, we'll split it in half and it's still good enough, right?
Yeah, that's a great deal.
Any rate. Okay. So we've got a couple of things this week. Most of them pretty short, but I thought they're interesting. Most of them Google-ish. In fact, I'm looking at my stuff. They're almost all Google-ish. So thing number one that's Google-ish is there's a Chromebook update, 1.02, which my two main Chromebooks just got. And one of the new features in Chrome OS 1.02, or whatever they're calling it now, is that it will tell you if you're using the wrong USB cable. You know, not all USB-C cables are made alike. Some are actually dangerous. And so it will tell you, hey, this is not, you know, pushing enough power, or this is not suitable for video or whatever. So kind of interesting. Also, I didn't see it in the blogs, but I noticed that the Linux container was also updated. Interesting enough, it requires an upgrade to the container itself. It's not just a software upgrade. And it failed on one Chromebook, and it succeeded in the other. So that was sort of interesting. I got to admit, I've played with it a few times. I don't need it for anything important. It's just kind of a toy. So the fact that it failed on one of my Chromebooks, the Linux upgrade failed, is not a big deal to me. The thing I noticed is, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, John. It says we use Google Docs. John and I use Google Docs for our show notes. And, you know, it's a shared folder, actually. And, you know, anytime we create a file, we both get immediate access to it. Anyway, so I've been happily copying and pasting stuff, like, say, a URL. Copy a URL from a browser and paste it into the show notes so that, you know, we each have a reference when we talk about something with each other. And in the last 10 days, maybe, I noticed that Chrome on the Chromebook requires me to add a Google Docs Online, and that's the name of it, Google Docs Online extension, into the browser to enable copy and pasting. Now, I don't know if I deleted Google Docs Online and then it stopped working and I had to re-add it, or I never had it and all of a sudden needs it, but I just noticed it recently. So, John, I don't know. You were pasting some shortcuts in. Did you notice that? Maybe it was me. Maybe I deleted it by accident.
You know, I don't think so. There's always been this weirdness with copy paste in Google Docs where, you know, right clicking and choosing paste will give you an error, but you can still hit Command V right. or Command Z and all that. So that's what I do. I use Safari. I don't think I have any plugins for Google Docs, but I've never quite figured out what the security issue is that prevents these things from working properly.
Right.
But it appears like there is something going on there that sometimes requires a helper.
Yeah. So it might be that I simply deleted. Well, I use Chrome, you know, obviously, because I'm usually on a Chromebook when I'm doing our show notes. And, I'll figure it out. I probably deleted the extension when I was cleaning up extensions. And maybe I just said, you really need this. And so it told me. Mm-hmm. The next thing is a combined Google-Apple news story, which I didn't know I needed this. I thought it always worked. So Waze, which Google bought several years ago, which is a nice, GIS-powered mapping tool, for driving and so forth. A lot of people have probably used it. In fact, before Google Maps got turn-by-turn directions, I think Waze was the only way to go. When it was an independent entity. Any rate, blog.google, Google's own official blog, says Apple Music is now available on Waze. I didn't know I couldn't play Apple Music from Waze, but I guess it's a more direct interface where...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting from this, because what I've always, I've listened to Apple Music while driving using Waze through CarPlay and all that. So I assume now Waze can directly control Apple Music. This is probably something that's more of a Android ability, considering that it doesn't seem to have ever been an issue for me on iOS.
Yeah.
But another native plugin, and it gets to the point where when I see media controls inside an app, I'm kind of confused. Like I have a use for, it's basically a cycling computer, and it's got media controls in it. Which is even weirder because I'm not going to swipe around and just to get to this little tiny next button, I'm going to, use Siri or I'm going to use something else to command to go to the next thing. But yeah, some people, I guess, really like native controls for their audio. Yeah.
And by the way, this is specifically for the iPhone. It doesn't mention Android at all in the Waze blog. So specifically for iPhone. All right. Well, I use Waze every now and then. I might try it. See if I like it.
I'm opening it up on my phone right now to see if I see any new controls that I never saw before. But Waze also has kind of an infuriating way it's laid out. I don't like, because half the applications you can't get to, or half the information you can't get to unless you are navigating somewhere.
Yep.
The other half you can't get to in other places. So yeah, I just went in. There's now an audio player setting, and your apps, Apple Music, will have it on there. Show on the map and show next song. So I guess that's what this now allows, is that you can see what song's coming up when you're looking at your map.
I hate Waze's UI, actually. Well, UX maybe is what I really hate. Not so much the UI.
Mm-hmm.
There are two things about it I hate. One, probably because I hardly use it, is I can never remember or easily remember how to turn off turn-by-turn directions if I don't need it anymore and it's still kind of yammering on. And one day it just got it completely wrong. I set a destination to, I knew how to get there. It's just, I wanted to avoid traffic jams and stuff. And, it was kind of like, it was trying to direct me to like something else completely on the other side, in the other direction. I said, well, this is just ridiculous. So I think I had to close the app because I couldn't remember how to just stop turn by turn. The other thing is, I really don't look at the map except when I've come to a stop at a stoplight or I'm stuck in traffic or something. But Waze likes to put its ads up, and it's about a third of a screen. So it really shrinks the map down or, truncates the map. And so when I really need to actually look at the map is when it obscures it through, some giant ad. So, yeah, another reason I really don't use Waze all that much. But, hey, if you do, and I know a lot of people enjoy using Waze, W-A-Z-E, for those who somehow don't know about it. It now supports Apple Music on your iPhone, so yay.
Yeah, and I do use Waze quite a bit. Every time I'm traveling, it's my primary navigation tool, just because I do long enough drive that Waze will save an appreciable amount of time.
So why do you use Waze instead of Google Maps? Both are Google products, so I'm just kind of curious.
I don't know. The Waze interface just seemed to work a little bit better, but I don't know. Maybe I still natively think that Google Maps won't do the auto rerouting as well as Waze will.
Interesting. Interesting. I have the opposite opinion, by the way. So, okay, different strokes. Okay, something that one more thing I want to know. So I've mentioned Google Cursive, and this is something John has never seen. Actually, you can't see it. I think it works on just a Chrome browser on a desktop. But so Google Cursive is a pen-based note-taking app, sort of like OneNote, except not quite as powerful, designed for Chromebooks that support pen use. And I tried it a while back, and it was, you know, moderately interesting. Really never used it full time, but Google is now making it pre-installed on more Chromebooks. I think it was only pre-installed on a high-end HP originally. And you can tap what they now call the everything button. We used to call it the search button. If you look on a Chromebook, there's like a magnifying glass, like a search icon. That they call that the everything button these days. And if you tap on that, you can search for the app and you can download or anything else really. Download it and or you can go to cursive.apps.chrome and hit install in the toolbar and get installed on an eligible Chromebook. I'm not sure what it won't install on. I've only tried it once or twice and it installed fine. So on a non-fancy-dancy HP notebook. So there you go, Google Cursive. I guess I'll give it another whirl. I've got a couple of Chromebooks that have pen support.
Okay, yeah, this is I would like it, but it doesn't work on anything other than a Chromebook, so okay. I can't play with it either.
Yeah. What happens if you... let me try it. Cursive.google.com. What happens if you do it on a... Yep. Oh. It says site can't be reached. Is that right? Cursive.apps.chrome. Sorry. Cursive.apps. If it would help I spell it. Cursive.apps.chrome. Something went wrong. Try reopening the app. Well, let's try reopening the app. No, it I can see my... wait a minute. It works now. Yay. So I am using a Chrome browser on a MacBook Air Pro. And it took about half a dozen, you know, try again, try again, try again. But I can see my notebooks in Chrome on a MacBook, even though, you know, it's not a Chromebook, obviously, but it is Chrome. So there you go. Alrighty. Next thing is something John and I talk about incessantly, and that's note-taking. We're both avid Evernote users for years and years and years, and we finally... At some point, we each gave up. I don't remember. It was around the same time, I think, that we gave up because it just got unstable.
When it became very clear that they were not, they had no idea what they were doing, and we couldn't justify trying to figure it out for them anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we went our separate ways, note-taking wise. I went to a couple of things. I use a combination of Google Keep and Notability, which is an iOS, macOS app that works great for me. Doesn't have a web interface, though, which is kind of a hassle. But John went to OneNote, I believe, not everything maybe, but a lot of what you do. And I resisted and I resisted. I use OneNote at work because, you know, we're very Windows-based at work and very Office 365-based. But personally, I never caught the bug, so to speak, to use it. But I finally decided yesterday. I'm trying to remember why I decided yesterday, but I gotta go recreate that thought. But yesterday
that was
I decided.
When the dropped off.
I'm sorry, say that again.
That was when the psychosis dropped off. When you came out of the all of a sudden, it was just I gotta use OneNote.
Well, it's funny, you know, because I'm planning to retire soon, and I decided, well, not so much to impart wisdom, but to impart a few observations to, you know, folks I know. On things I observed over the last several decades of doing various kinds of projects, that I'd write about a couple of things, not long essays, just, you know, a paragraph or two of observations, maybe with a photo to illustrate. And I thought I had a couple of ideas, and I said, you know, I need to put it somewhere. Google Keep wasn't quite where I wanted it. notability wasn't quite where I wanted it. I wanted it to be everywhere. I wanted it to be on the web. I wanted it to be on my mobile devices, desk, anywhere I was. I just wanted to have access to it. So I said, well, let's give OneNote one more try. And so I did. And so actually I used OneNote on a Chromebook in the browser to create a notebook inside of OneDrive. And I moved over to an iPhone and an iPad, and I've used it pretty much everywhere now to create some notes for. I haven't quite decided on a title for this series of blog items. So far, it's Thoughts Before I Go.
I mean, that's true, but it sounds like you're. I mean, I want you to just go into transition. Thoughts Before I Transition is
Thoughts Before I Transition. That's fair. Sounds very Star Trek-y. So I like
that. Yeah. Ascension. Thoughts Before Ascension would be interesting.
I thought about the photo you took years ago.
Yeah, the Ascended Todd photo.
The Ascended Todd photo, which is hilarious. Anyway, so I tried it and said, well, this doesn't suck too badly. You know, it's not as bad as a poking eye with a sharp stick. So I'm going to try to make peace with it. And I've already put in like four blog themes, blog ideas maybe. One of them is going to be really short. Well, I think it's going to be really short, but you might find it amusing. And, you know, if you've ever run a project with just lots and lots of stakeholders, very vocal stakeholders, you know, who are doing important stuff with what you want to change, there is never, you know, they always want to do it on a particular period of time. And, of course, none of them actually agree, or maybe not agree is not the right word. The timing for their various requirements are never in alignment. Right? They have blackout dates for, you know, this week, and then other person's blackout dates for the month after. And it just becomes a planning zoo. And so in the final months and weeks leading up to the completion of the project, which was a big one, and affected like thousands of people, I started uttering, I guess what you might call a mantra. Mm-hmm. And the mantra was, there are no good days. They're just bad days and worse days. Pick one. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so those are the kind of things I wanna, you know, comment on before I transition.
I think that is a fair comment. I have seen planning paralysis happen in so many groups where, okay, we need to find the best time to do this. Well, what about this month? Oh, that's a horrible month. Can't do it that month. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what about during the summer? Oh, can't do it during the summer. We don't have enough people around. Okay, well, how about October? You know, it's Halloween just is going to get in the way. And, you know, what about how about November? You know, tryptophan will be sleepy after that. So yeah, you're right. At some point, you just have to do it. There's not going to be any good days or any good months.
Yeah, and of course, days that end in Y, they're all bad.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they're all bad. Which is why tomorrow is the best time. But unfortunately, by the time you get there, it'll be today, and it'll end in Y.
So that's you right. Won't be able to
I have been through that pain a number of times. I've seen things die on the vine so often because people just won't move on them. You're right. There's no good time.
Yep. Only bad times and worse times. But the other one I think you personally might be amused is I also have a topic that I think I mentioned to you before. It's called thinking inside the box. Mm-hmm. And it's not a repudiation of thinking outside of the box. It does not contradict it. In fact, it's a corollary to it, maybe. And that is working with severe constrictions or severely constricted environments. And I thought that might be kind of an interesting topic, since I don't think anybody ever has all the money and people and skills that they need for any particular project. So
well, and it's reminding me, I actually have an article that will be coming out sometime in the next year in the journal Teaching of Psychology that talks about how to build an open source research platform for an undergraduate institution that doesn't have the money to pay for some of the more expensive products.
Exactly.
So once that is finally in print, I will talk about it a bit more. But you're right. Sometimes you have to make do with what you have. I've actually for this particular project come up with a demo virtual machine that people can download, as well as some videos on YouTube that walk through how to set this up. But, you know, it's a little bit daunting in that you have to be comfortable being able to do a little bit of programming and a little bit of your own sysadmining. But when you're talking about saving thousands of dollars a year, sometimes that's what you have to do in order to get the product that you need or get the experience that you need.
Or not even just saving the money. It's money you don't have to spend to begin with. You know, and or people, you know, people you don't have resources to begin with. One of the challenges we faced was that during the majority of the pandemic, I'm one of those people still think we're in it, but, you know, other people think it's not, so fine. But during the 2 years of the pandemic that we all agree on, or most of us agree on, our positions are frozen, including ones where people retired or left. And so as people retired or left, and I think I had a total of 30 during that period, and not including one passing, I could not backfill those positions. And so, you know, this was, I'm trying to think of a good analog, but I guess it's like if you were playing chess and your opponent is able to randomly select without any strategic moves, just taking pieces off your board. You know, and you have to deal with whatever is left. And so, you know, those kind of things. But anyway, John, so if you have any super pointers to OneNote or super duper tips, I would appreciate them over time.
Yeah, the only thing that I was ever really annoyed with OneNote, and then I finally figured out how to do it, and it sounds kind of weird, is linking from OneNote to another OneNote document.
A hypertext.
Hypertext within OneNote, for whatever reason, was it did not come easy to me to figure out. And the whole thing that I then realized you had to be able to do was to right-click on a page and choose a copy link to page item. And then you can go to another page and paste in that link. But yeah, that's kind of a, you know, you would think that Microsoft might make it so that if you were to, you know, highlight some text and hit Command K or whatever K, it would give you a nice search so that you could search your other notes and link it directly, kind of like WordPress does with blog posts. But no, when you hit on a Mac, when you hit Command K, you just get address and you have to put in where you want it to go. So that was one of my annoyances with OneNote. But I've gotten to the point where I can find it, where I use it quite a bit now, and I use it for all of my course prep. I use it for my own for meeting minutes and all those things too. So the only thing I don't use it for are quick notes, which I'll use more Apple Notes for if I'm just scrawling something. I just need a scratch pad in a sense, then I'll use Apple Notes for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I do, you know, now that you mention it, I also use Apple Notes. Not as often as you probably. I probably use Keep for these quick notes, Google Keep. But that's a good thought. You know, one thing that one thing that has been bothering me since I started using it yesterday is that OneNote in the web browser, in my case, I'm using Chrome. When you create a, or after you create a note, you start typing and it's kind of like Evernote. You know, you start typing and there it is. And that's fine. That's the way I kind of want it to work. But the moment you go to a fat client, in my case, either on a, well, not either. And I haven't yet actually tried OneNote on a MacBook yet, but OneNote, the fat iPad, fat OneNote app for iPad or iOS, it's actually movable windows again. You know, and it's only one window because in the browser, that's apparently all you got, which is fine. You know, I'm actually I like that. So that's one thing I got to get used to is, you know, one of the things I hated about OneNote is the fact it had multiple text windows within a note, whatever they called it, I guess a page within a section. So, I'll get used to it. But I'm starting to like it. I'm starting to, you know, say, oh yeah, I can use this.
Very good. Well, I will be interested to hear your OneNote thoughts as we move through the next few months as you see how it works and how it doesn't work for you.
Might be another blog item, you know, OneNote for geezers, but Any rate, it sounds like you fixed something that was annoying you too, speaking of annoyances.
Yeah, so this is an annoyance that I've had for quite a while, and I will preface it by saying that I can't be the only person that has this problem, and Apple needs to do something about it. So I use Siri for, you know, a number of things throughout the day that are fairly simple things that I just need to get done because I am walking somewhere or, you know, play this or play this podcast, right. All those sorts of things. The annoyance that I had was that when I would tell Siri to play a playlist that I had named Essentials, which was, you know, my essential music that I like,
right.
About 90% of the time, Siri would pick a random playlist that I had never heard of and say, you know, now playing Journey Essentials or something like that. Well, right. That's not what I asked for. I asked for, you know, I have a playlist on this device named Essentials. Play that. So that was kind of confusing. So then I thought, well, I will compromise Apple. I will name it John's Essentials, because how are you going to screw that one up? You know, there's no one else probably has that, you know, easily searchable. It's not like, you know, there's a bunch of Johns on the planet that all name their playlists that. So even if there is another one in Apple Music, hopefully I am the one that you'll go with. I thought that was going to work, and then it didn't, because then I would get playing John Sanchez, which apparently there is a John Sanchez, but if you go to his listing in Apple Music, there's no music there. So not only is it wrong, it's also not very helpful. And so finally, I came up with a compromise. I made a shortcut that asks me what playlist, and I only have three or four that I, you know, use regularly. The others are all, you know, I would actually don't mind browsing through my list of playlists to find the one I listen to once a year, like my Christmas playlist or something like that. So it asks me which one I want, and then it plays exactly that one on shuffle. And it's kind of stupid that I had to build this shortcut to do it, but if you've ever used the menu option in shortcuts, it is nice because Siri will read you the options from your menu and then recognize which one you select. So you can build these out as complex as you need them and still interact with them over voice, which is kind of nice, especially if you're like me and you're riding a bike or something like that. And you don't particularly want to have to reach over and touch something if you can avoid it.
You know, it's funny. Siri, maybe I talk funny. Siri doesn't like me. I'm pretty much convinced of this. And Siri also interrupts me all the time when I'm not addressing her at all. Or them. Well, however we're supposed to address Siri in third person. But at any rate, Siri doesn't like me. I'm pretty convinced of this. And Siri doesn't understand me. You know, so I hardly ever use it. And when I do, it's just frustrating usually. I ask it a question and it just gets it wrong. That said, for our FISA listeners, if you want to hear or see something really funny, go to YouTube and go search for Scottish Elevator Voice Recognition. It's a pretty old video, but it is hilarious. It's not Siri, it's just voice recognition in general, but it's basically their problem was it's expecting an American accent, and if you don't have an American accent, you know, the voice recognition system in this elevator in Scotland is not happy. Anyway,
I will put also that I put this in our show notes. Mm-hmm. If you are someone who bikes or doesn't want to have to look for soft controls on your screen, mm-hmm. like maybe you don't care about Waze, including transport controls, like mm-hmm. we said earlier, I did find this little item on Amazon a number of weeks ago. It's about $36, and it's basically a square button that includes a number of other buttons, a volume up and down, a forward, a back, a phone answer, a media mute, you know, start-stop control. And it comes with mounting brackets to either put it on a steering wheel or put it on a handlebar of a bike. So if you just want to have the controls where you need them instead of having to reach over to a phone, or you don't want to yell at your assistant, you know, Siri doesn't understand you or something like that, you can use this device. And it runs off of a CR2032 battery, so a mm-hmm. button
coin cell
battery.
Yep.
It says it'll work up to 3 years with that one battery. So not a bad little device if you're wanting to have an actual button for something versus a screen.
Yep. 4 out of 5 stars on Amazon with over 1,000 ratings. Order soon. There's only 12 in stock. So
yeah.
Hopefully by the time you hear this, there'll still be a couple left. In my car, you know, my car is so old. I have no hand controls for anything. I don't have Bluetooth. And so I put in a Bluetooth accessory, which costs about the same as this, that is an FM transmitter. You know, basically only people in the old, with old cars need it. But it has these controls on it, which are great, you know. So, and they're big enough, and this one looks big enough that you really don't have to look at it to use it. You can just do it by touch. And so, yeah. That looks really
and the
really
nice
handy.
Thing is that this one docks to its little holder through magnets.
Oh.
So if you are putting it on your bike handlebars and you don't want to leave it there when you leave your bike locked up somewhere, you can just pull it off and take it with you, and then it snaps right back into place when you're ready to go.
Nice. Nice.
So how does that FM transmitter work for you? I never had good luck with FM transmitters.
Oh, actually, you know, once you find an empty space that is relatively empty. And remember, I'm only on one island, right? You go from state to state to state, so it's a little bit different for you. The radio station frequencies here are pretty much static from my point of view. No matter where I am, they're going to be the same, you know, frequencies for each station. It doesn't really change. So I just found one. For me, I think I found, 106.3.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty quiet wherever I drive on the island of Oahu. And the sound quality, you know, I'm not an audiophile. So, and I don't have good, you know, like I said, I have an old car. So my speakers aren't that good anyway. And I mostly listen to audiobooks. And so the audio quality is fine. I don't get much in the way of interference. In the old days, when lots and lots of people had FM transmitters in their cars, I would get crosstalk. From, you know, like 15 years ago. But as more people buy new cars, except for me, and they all have, you know, Bluetooth or wired solution, a USB solution, that crosstalk has essentially disappeared. I don't think I've heard crosstalk in years now. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with it.
My problem was that I was always in an area that was heavily dominated by FM stations.
Yeah.
And when I lived in Ohio and I lived in New York, it just, there were stations all up and down the dial, so you couldn't find any open space for an FM transmitter.
Yep, I can see that. And there are a couple of low power stations here, you know, in various spots. And I remember I picked a much lower frequency, like in a 96, 98 range, somewhere around there, or when I first got this thing. And I thought, oh yeah, this is great, sounds great. And then I drove like 10 miles, and there was, you know, I said they're mostly static. It's not 100% static. There was some low power station that was interfering with me. Oh, I know what it was. It wasn't a low power commercial station. I think it was a low power, you know, like not quite ham radio, but they were using FM frequencies for short haul communications with the business, and it was causing interference with me. You know, I played around with various frequencies until I came upon 106.3 for me on Oahu, at least. Not watch a new radio station pop up right in that,
that range. Yeah, that'll be the new one that'll start up tomorrow. Yeah. You know, growing up in Northern Ohio, we were at the apex of a lot of different stations. And my favorite example of that was when I was, when I first moved from Ohio to New York, I happened to one day be on the AM band. And of course, AM radio can have an extremely long range that you don't think about, but it can. And I had turned on 1200, AM 1200 in Cleveland, Ohio is a news station, WCAM. Right. And I could pick it up 450 miles away in New York. I remember sitting in my car waiting to get out and go get on the train to go to work and thinking, gee, I can listen to the same local radio that I listen to.
Was it pretty clear?
It was clear enough, even at 450 miles away. Where,
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. These days, I guess you'd get Sirius XM or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
If you really wanted consistent.
I still use Sirius XM, and it is nice when you are traveling like I do to not have to change stations. You know, put it on one station in the morning, and when you're 800 miles away at night, you're still on the same station. You haven't had to be scrambling around looking for for a station.
Something. So. Yeah, something to listen to. How much does SiriusXM cost? And are there different tiers, or is there only one?
There are different tiers. The one I'm on right now, I think I pay somewhere around $26 or $28 a month, but that also includes streaming through the app. Yeah. So quite often my wife will listen to it at work. She listens to it pretty much every day, and I listen to it in the car. And when we're home, we listen to it through Sonos. So as long as you don't have more than one active stream, we've never run into an issue with needing multiple streams.
No, interesting. I'm not even sure we have that here. I should look.
I wish I had gotten in, because I did buy SiriusXM back when it was just XM and Sirius was a separate company.
Right.
Back in 2004, I think I got an account with XM. I wish I had bought the Lifetime, although I think they might have somehow found a way to get rid of the Lifetime customers at this point. But for a long time there, you could be grandfathered in under their Lifetime plan.
Oh, and I just checked, and it says SiriusXM claims they're available in Hawaii and Alaska. You know, I don't feel the need to listen to live radio anymore, but if I did, at least I have that option.
Well, the irony for my wife and I is that the station we listen to the most is Jimmy Buffett's Radio Margaritaville, which actually predates SiriusXM, and you can still, I think, somewhere find the stream for free, because it was his internet radio station in the 90s that then SiriusXM picked up, and they produce it now through a SiriusXM production, all that. But I think the actual radio station is still free somewhere to listen to if you can find the stream.
Yeah, that reminds me, you know, when I was reading the announcement again, you know, harkening back to our original topic about Conan O'Brien getting 150 mil for his podcast empire, the podcast will still be available outside of SiriusXM. So it's not like, I guess, Howard Stern, where you have to subscribe. I think you have to subscribe to SiriusXM to listen to Howard Stern. But I'm going to guess the podcasts that are currently freely available remain, but any new content he creates for the, because he's going to have his own channel on SiriusXM. I'm going to assume, that didn't say in the article, but I'm going to assume that the new stuff will only be available there as for subscribers. So, interesting. Still not tempted, you know, as much as I enjoy his his content. That's actually kind of expensive. I didn't realize it cost so much. All right. Okie dokie. That is it for this podcast, 408. And we'll talk to you next time.